you ever wonder what parenting is really like? Do you think that you're the only one that's struggling? Or have you missed out on that amazing hack everyone was talking about? Well, that sounds like you. Grab a seat and get comfy, as you'll be hearing real life stories from parents that are on the same collective journey, a little thing called parenthood. We'll hear from parents, caregivers, and experts as we fumble through this wonderful path together. I'm your host, Rashida, and welcome to the Parents Connecting Podcast. Hi everyone, welcome back to Parents Connecting. Do you ever have a conversation with someone that is so relatable, so juicy, so interesting, and so inspiring that it moves you to action? Or maybe it's just that you feel that human connection and you got energized? Well, this episode did that for me, and I hope it does for you. I can't wait for you to hear my talk with my guest, Darcy Hawkhurst, who is a founding member of the Certified MAF Method Health and Fitness Coaches and Practitioners. She's also a child brain developmentalist and neurological evaluator, a writer, a speaker, and literacy expert. And maybe most importantly, she's a mom who is determined to heal her brain-injured daughter. She shifted her paradigm from brain-damaged to brain-injured, which allowed her to find resources and the root causes of brain injury and how she could heal them. Through her own journey, she learned about the brain, nutrition, movement, and how they can all impact your body, and most importantly, how they can be harnessed to achieve a balanced body and one that just feels good. How often do you go through your day where you just feel blah? This is such a great episode, and I'm so glad to be bringing this to you as the year winds down, because it's a time where we reflect on where we've been and where we want to go. So if you're in a place where you're really just not feeling your best for whatever reason, this episode is for you. By understanding some of the fundamentals of what we need for our brains and body, we can start addressing the root causes and start a path to feeling our best. So subscribe to the show now, and please tell your friends, your family, and anyone that you know, because this conversation is meant to be shared. So without further ado, let's get into it. Well, hi, Darcy. Thank you so much for being on the show. I am very excited to talk with you. I know you have a lot of good stuff that you're doing for the community, and I'm very interested to hear your story. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rashida. It is so good to be with you.
Absolutely. So I'd like to just kind of dive in. Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you live, your kids' age, and then we'll kind of walk through how you became a mom and your journey there and where it's led you to today.
Yeah, so I live in the heart of the Midwest, you know, I say that because the tree outside my window today is like perfectly golden. It's so beautiful here. Live in the middle of a deciduous forest that, you know, used to be inhabited by the native people who were here. This is basically Miami and Shoshone land. And I live here in this beautiful college town with my daughter, my live-at-home college-age daughter, who I'm going to tell you more about here in a minute, right?
Yes.
And my bestie who's asleep under the chair, my golden retriever, Bella. She is my inspiration and my role model for really how to live a healthy life, which we'll talk more about too, because, you know, she doesn't want me to sit here in front of the computer very long. We're supposed to be outside. We're supposed to be moving our bodies. We're supposed to be playful. And that's what I'm really all about, because I think that we have gotten off track, and I learned so much of this from my journey to rehabilitate my daughter. So I'm happy to talk more about that today.
Yeah, that's an amazing segue. Why don't we talk about your daughter and some of the experiences that you've had with her and how you healed her.
Yeah. So, you know, when I say I live here with my, you know, my live at home college student daughter, like on the surface, that's kind of a so what, you know. A lot of people have live at home college kids, but this is so, every time I say it, I feel really moved, because, you know, Haley's going to graduate in May. She just applied for graduation. Like, I still sometimes have to pinch myself. When my daughter was born, she was 12 days old when I had to rush her to the hospital in the middle of the night. She had a fever of almost 104. They whisked her out of my arms, you know, brought her back a little while later, stripped down in an incubator with tubes and wires coming out of everywhere. And, you know, it wasn't confirmed until like the next day, but they were acting as if it was spinal meningitis, because that's so common when you see an infection in a young baby like that. So there were more than a couple tense, terrible nights. You know, one of them where we just about almost lost her. She began to have seizures that were so, you know, they were full body seizures, and they call them status epilepticus. So they were seizures that weren't stopping on their own. And it was from the swelling and the pressure inside her brain. So it wasn't so much that the seizure was a problem.
And
And
this was
that can,
before you took her to the hospital that she was
oh,
having
this
these.
was in the hospital.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I'm going to say something that's kind of like, this is where it becomes this paradigm shift that I teach, but the seizure itself wasn't the problem. The seizure was a symptom of the problem and the swelling of the brain, which so Haley was in grave danger, and they rushed her this one particular night in the hospital. You know, she's 13 days old now, and I can't hold her. The only way I can touch her is through the little space portals of the incubator that she's kept in. And she was in unconscious, and you could see from the grimace on her face that she was in terrible pain and having these really frightening seizures. And the local hospital just basically, they kind of threw their arms up like, we don't know what else to do. So the doctor on call made the decision to send her to the nearest children's hospital. It's about 60 miles away. They had to have a special ambulance, special team, like come get her for this. And I assumed I was going too. And when they kind of stopped, there's not room in the ambulance for anybody but this medical team. And I was like, wow. I think it finally kind of hit me what was really happening. And they didn't make me any promises that she would be there when I got there.
Oh my gosh.
So,
And so
needless
at
to say,
this point, do you know, do you, so you, she's been in the hospital. Do you know, have you, were you aware that it was spinal meningitis or that they were thinking of it? Or
yeah, I
what
think
led you to the hospital, I guess, to begin with?
the fever. She had a fever of like
Ah, okay.
104 in the middle of the night. I couldn't get her. She was fussy, and I couldn't get her to settle down. And so yeah, and I think when I first showed up in the hospital, yeah. So what happened was I called in the backup. So I had my mom, because I was a single mom at this point too. I called in the backup. My mom came to help, and she was the one who was like, maybe we should take her temperature. And then she was like, get your keys, get in the car. It's almost 104. We're going to the hospital. And I mean, I didn't even get dressed. I was in a pajama top, probably milk stained. And all of this just snowballed to this moment where I was like, this is something's really happening. Like this is a big deal. And in that moment, I knew that something really powerful and important was happening. From here, I can giggle a little because I can see what it was. And human design, I don't know if you study human design at all. My daughter is a manifester. So if you've ever had to live with a manifester, like they can be a real pain in the ass. They make shit happen. They change your mind about things. They set stuff into motion that is going to have huge, large trickle-down effects. And that's basically what Haley was doing. I think her soul came knowing exactly that she was gonna do something dramatic, and I needed to buckle in. So, we spent a couple of weeks then in the children's hospital. Yeah, the spinal tap comes back positive for group B strep, and it's meningitis. And so that now they know what to do with antibiotics. And
And do you know, and this might be maybe a silly or a simple question, but do you know what was the, did we know what the cause of it was or?
yeah. We do. So, because I had a urinary tract infection like 2 days after giving birth. And
Okay.
Haley was born in 1993. So this is literally like 6 months to 12 months right before the birthing protocols changed. And, you're tested for group B strep
Right. Yep.
starting right
Yep.
after that because it's present. And I don't know. I mean, I don't
It's
know.
very common. Yeah, I don't know what the percentages are, but
Yeah, it's present in the birth canal, and it's usually harmless unless you have a long, slow, painful birth where your waters were broken and the baby's in a dry birth canal for a long time, and then some of that gets into their mucous membranes through their nose or their mouth. And so
My
yeah.
daughter was in the NICU as well. They thought that she had a spinal tap because they thought it was been, luckily it wasn't, but yeah. I mean, it's scary. It's very scary.
So I spent more than a couple nights, sleeping in a chair in the NICU. And and back in those days, the breast pump machine was like in a janitor's closet,
Oh my
like
gosh.
down in the bowels of the hospital or something. Like I remember having to like it was a long walk, and I would go every couple of hours. Well, number one, for my own comfort. Number two, because that was like
Oh.
And they weren't, it wasn't in your room. Okay, so that's a whole different, oh,
Oh, hell no. It
oh
was
my God.
loud. Right. And I
Wow,
remember my
yeah.
mom, when my mom would come visit me and she'd go with me, she was like, I can't believe this is so, like, she was kind of like trying to clean and like clear the dust and the cobwebs so I'd have a place to sit. There's like one chair in there,
Oh,
you know?
wow.
Oh, it was terrible. And but that was I called it my march of faith because number one, I had to, you know, express some of my milk. I mean, it's painful. And I was determined, I didn't want to dry up. That was like my prayer that she will need this and I need to have it. And so even when, you know, 2 or 3 days turned into almost 3 weeks and they began to do some testing. I remember, I think it was mostly men. There might have been a female doctor at the time, but standing in a long, you know, fluorescent lit corridor, his team of white coats around me and their sort of clipboards and they're pointing and all the places they were demonstrating on their heads. Frontal lobe and occipital lobe and temporal lobe and all the places where my daughter had her brain had bled and where they were saying she was brain damaged. And I don't use that word anymore. We've kind of come through this to understand that the brain is highly plastic and it can be treated. And there are tons of neurons that are not even used, let alone the fact that new neurons come online all the time. And so all of, you know, it has taken me a couple of decades to learn all of this and get where I am now. But I remember that afternoon in the NICU corridor where they basically said, we don't know what will come of her,
Oh, wow.
but it won't
Oh, my gosh.
be normal. You know, and so fast forward to 3 years old, 4 years old, she's on four, five, six different seizure medications now and still having seizures. The spasticity in her left leg was getting worse. The strabismus, the crossing of her eyes becomes worse. The dangerous side effects from all the different medications they were trying become worse. There were, yeah.
And what does meningitis, I mean, for folks that aren't even familiar with maybe meningitis, what are the things that are symptomatic of meningitis? Well, what does it do to the body if you have meningitis?
So the meninges are the lining of your brain and spinal cord, and it's a nice cushy tissue, fatty layer that cushions your, you know, protects the central nervous system. And just like any other system of the body, it can become infected. And when that happens, there's inflammation and swelling. And so meningitis, the itis means inflammation. And so the swelling of those tissues, you know, inside the cranium, inside the skull can only expand so much to make room for that swelling. And so what had to give was the brain. So it's the
Okay.
pressure of all that swelling that breaks blood vessels all around the surface of the brain. And when that happens, number one, the glucose and, you know, the blood isn't supposed to touch those tissues of the brain. It's not supposed to touch the neurons themselves. So there's that damage, but the blood is meant to carry nutrients and oxygen to keep those neurons alive. And so when that happens, you get all of these neurons. And again, they pointed to the places in Haley's brain where those brain cells had died. And so they, you know, they told me it was going to be, you know, visual problems and hearing problems and understanding and learning problems. You know, based on because those are the parts of the brain that would do those jobs. And now those parts are gone, they tell me, right?
And did you see that happen over those, at least those first few years of while she's still on these medications? Like, were the things that they said were going to be a challenge? Did you see those?
Oh yeah, right. So her eyes were completely crossed,
Mm.
which makes it hard to learn to read. Yeah, she was, and again, it was not until I actually found the Doman Method program, which that's a long story too, and I'm happy
Yeah.
to share these resources with people. But
Yeah, absolutely. We'll put them on the
basically,
show
this
notes.
paradigm shift where we learned that, you know, all of these parts of the brain can be treated and they can outgrow some of these issues. Yeah, so I watched Haley basically not be able to do what her peers could do. I mean, it was like her growth was slowed. It was like her growth was stunted. It was like there were certain things that just weren't happening. And in some ways, I think we're very, very lucky because we had that incident where we knew this is what happened to the brain. And so these are the parts of the brain that won't be able to perform their jobs. And there are a lot of kids out there with really similar symptoms, especially the learning disability symptoms that don't have that dramatic sort of origin story. So
Right.
parents don't know. And this, you know, this happens all the time. So, you know, Haley's labels, and again, I don't I don't feel super comfortable with labels. I think just like photographs, they're pictures of a moment in time. And I don't think, unfortunately, a lot of us get really attached to what that label is trying to say, and we take on an identity for ourselves with it. So some of her labels were mild cerebral palsy, epilepsy, learning disabilities, multiple affective disorders, which is a fancy way to say she tantrumed a lot. And of course she did, because what we come to find out later is these parts of the brain that were injured. We use the word injury instead of damage, because if you injure your ankle, you don't assume that you can never use the ankle again. And if we injure a brain, damaged goods is like, seems so permanent, doesn't it?
That is, that's a complete paradigm shift. It's a very different perspective.
And so it was just injured. And so I spent a good 20 years then helping to rehabilitate that brain. And
And how did you even think, because the word damage was to use, and back then, like, what made you think that there was something that you could do? Because I think sometimes, we're told something, and and temperament, I think, of the person matters, but, like, some things you just, okay, I have to accept this, right? Like, where is the line between, oh, this is something that happened, it's really terrible, I need to accept this, versus, wow, there's something that I can do here. Like, what made you even go into that path?
That is such a wonderful question. I just have to tell you the total truth. I didn't come with the acceptance chip. And people will often say to me, like, wow, when they learn of what we did and where Haley is now, they'll say, like, well, and all along the way of this journey, because I had to get help, I had to ask, get financial support. And so I was always telling the story, and people say, wow, what an amazing mother you are. Like, how wonderful for Haley that she has this incredible mother that you do this. And it was like, I mean, thank you, but I can't not do this. I didn't really have this idea that it's not like I necessarily went looking for there has to be a solution, as much as in the beginning, I just, Rashida, I literally couldn't accept it. I couldn't accept it. I just could not believe that this is all she was going to be. And part of that is because I looked in her eyes the minute she was born. And without words, she really did say, like, buckle in. She didn't look young to me. She looked ancient and wise. And I thought, well, something is happening here. So I just couldn't accept it. I couldn't. And it made me a really terrible mother for a good long time for those first many years, because I would be so frustrated. I just was not able to accept it. And, I think energetically, that's why I was open. It was like one thing led to another. The story goes that my mom had gone to physical therapy school and had read this article by this genius at the moment, this paradigm shifting. It became known as the field of child brain development, but at the time, there was no such thing. And his name was Glenn Doman. He had been a physical therapist, but he began to really question, why are we treating all these parts of the body when we know the problem is in the brain? And that took him down the path where he created this place called the Institutes for the Achievement of Human Potential. My mom had read this article. She eventually one day kind of, one thing leads to another, but she hands me this phone number and she says, I think you should give them a call. I think there's something there. So I did. And, one thing led to another, and I found myself on that campus learning from Glenn Doman, the great Glenn Doman, about the brain and how it is plastic and how it can change, but not if we don't do something about it, and all the things the brain needs to heal and what's really happening inside that brain. So when you have a child like my daughter whose eyes were completely crossed, well, you could put glasses on there that will kind of help the eyes to look straight. But what's really happening is deeper than that. It's an oxygenation issue. It's damage to the occipital lobe. Once we get that sorted out, people even today will be like, when they see Haley, because her eyes are straight now, and people wonder, did she have surgery? And no, we treated the brain. It was the brain sending that message to the eyes, and so we treated the brain, and now it sends a different message, and she can read and see straight. She doesn't have seizures anymore, mostly. The stress of college has changed that a little bit, but she's not medicated. She's run she, the kid who could barely walk up and down a flight of stairs without tripping and falling became a triathlete and a gymnast. And yeah, wow. And my dad would disagree, but she's not special in that happened to her. She was stuck with a mom like me who just couldn't accept it. I just couldn't accept that she would not have the life of her choosing.
So kind of walk us through from maybe those first couple of years. You said she's 18 now. And so where were the years where you focused, and kind of what did you do? What did you learn? And talk to us about the changes that you saw once you sounds like you implemented something. I'm
Yeah,
curious.
so the program, it's called the Doman Method Program, and I'm happy to point people in the direction. There are a couple of places where you can find it. So yeah, we could put in the show notes
Yeah,
people about how to
absolutely.
find
We'll put
me, and
everything.
then if you know
Yep.
if this resonates or you have a child with these kinds of struggles, I want to put you on the path to this. And so the term we want to use here is neurological reorganization. And it
Okay.
involves lots of different things. I mean, we need to heal. A brain is a physiological organ, so it requires nutrients. You know, it
Yeah.
requires plenty of good fat. And this is one of the things I just got off a call, teaching a group of people that I coach, about what proper nutrition looks like. It's not eat a little less sugar, and I know that's bad news to a lot of people, but we evolved on this planet with we evolved these big brains, walking around at an easy intensity all day and foraging for some carbohydrate dense foods like berries. I mean, how many blueberries can you eat in one sitting if you want to?
Right.
Where it's totally, it's
My
totally out
son
of
will eat
context.
an entire bowl or an entire quart. I don't
Yeah, well, that would take hours to pick off a
know.
bush, And so, but you get my point. Like we live in these modern worlds where certain things look normal that are totally not normal to the evolution of the human body and brain. And so the basics of this program are to get back to those basics that the brain needs to thrive, to grow. This is really about speeding brain growth. And the premise of it is that the body and brain know exactly what they're up to. They will thrive if we are not doing something to get in their way. Now what got in the way for my daughter? Well, meningitis got in the way. And then what got in the way? Seizure medications got in the way, big time. And then what got in the way? Well, I began to learn. Eating McDonald's was getting in the way. There's no nutrition in there. You can't ask a brain to heal and catch up and grow and repair itself if you're not putting in the proper nutrition. So this means eating real, whole, unprocessed foods, eating plenty of fat. We've really kind of got the balance wrong. We eat way more sugar and not enough fat. They've got us fat phobic. And we evolved these brains by eating high fat diets as early humans. And so we've really got to get back to what we need. And there's more to it. I mean, there's definitely techniques that we can learn to help. For example, the eyes to straighten and muscles. When tight muscles, like what you want to call a label, like cerebral palsy. My daughter had mild cerebral palsy. I prefer to call it muscle imbalance. And why is that muscle too tight? Well, it's not well oxygenated. And why is that? So, just sort of uncovering these root causes. And it was
And
intense.
was it nutrient, like, so you talk about nutrients. How did you even, I think it's, at least for me, it is so difficult to even sometimes understand like what is healthy versus what is not. There's like a plethora of information out there. And as parents, we're like, okay, let's reduce the sugar and like not eat, it's like we try to use the language of whole foods versus non-foods or, but as a parent and as a busy person, like how do you even start? And so I'm like, when your daughter was younger, did you have a really great like whole food diet at that point? Did something that was obviously you learned about it? Is that something you incorporated that you just saw such a change? Or what was sort of the impetus of it all?
Yeah, this is a great question because, well, in the beginning, so a big part of the program that I was learning, so, I signed up, like, just sign me up. And I didn't care what it was going to cost. I was going to find that. And I didn't care what time it was going to take. I was going to quit my job and stay home and do that, to do this program that Glenn Doman taught and his staff, the whole staff of people. So yes, nutrition was a big part of it. The primal, the movement stuff was a part of it. We knew we were repairing a cortex. We knew we were repairing a midbrain. Like we knew we had to do these things that like primary human development stuff. And so nutrition was a big part of it. And when I first took the course, I was smoking a pack a day and eating pretzels out of a box. So I mean, I fed Haley better than that, but not much, probably. I mean, it was, and so yeah, it was typical for us to go through a fast food line. So when I started to learn about this, it was difficult because I'm like you. I'm like, well, I thought this was healthy, and it's actually So it takes time. You know, a lot of that stuff that we're doing is addictive. We're doing it because we're addicted. And no, it took me quite a while. In fact, when I began to learn about sugar and sugar's impact on the brain, and I tried to quit sugar myself, it was so hard in the beginning. And I would actually do this. We would go to the YMCA to do her running program, physical activity, not for exercise the way people think about exercise, but for brain organization. Like, you have no idea how much you can get out of a good cortex when you use cross pattern movement, you get it oxygenated. So we had this running program, and we would stop on the way home and buy Oreos, but I would only eat them in the car with her. And because I didn't have them in the house, right? So that was in the house, we ate them in the car. But you know, at one point she was like, you know, she was old enough to begin to understand the hypocrisy of that, the ridiculousness of that. Plus, we began to notice that, you know, that became fewer and farther between. And you could tell the day she ate the Oreos, she was just for shit in her homeschooling program. And you begin to see cause and effect, and some of us are more sensitive than others. And all of that has to do with really what is our carbohydrate tolerance. And that's something I teach about. That's not something we really have heard before, and it became so obvious with my daughter, and she's not alone. Kids who have brain injuries, whether those are traumatic brain injuries, or they are just, you know, what we call now neurodiversities. Those are still forms of brain injury because the brain isn't sort of working according to its like evolutionary programming. You know, there's been something to change it. And those kids are super sensitive, very sensitive. And you can see the impact of a poor diet. And it's heartbreaking for me to watch because I know that those brains would be growing and healing if they were getting what they needed to do that.
And so, I mean, I'm glad that you sort of have this opposite beginning, because I think a lot of people can come into a space where I know I need to do better. There's like so many people that you got to eat whole foods, but I'm not there, and they don't even know where to start. But it sounds like you had that start and you can relate to it. Mm-hmm. And so, and it sounds like you're now on an opposite path. So I'm very curious as to how you made that shift. And also provide a little bit of validation to folks really hearing this, to say that even if you're there right now, doesn't mean that you have to stay there.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Yeah. And it is truly, it's a process of evolution and personal development. I mean, I was really out to save my daughter's life, because I knew that if I left her with those learning disabilities and the physical disabilities, if we didn't solve the seizure issue, you know, the medications were dangerous and some of the seizures were dangerous. Like, what was I going to do? Like, I had to fix this. And as I began to see these tools working, nutrition was not the only tool. It was one of the most powerful ones. And as we got deeper and deeper into that journey and fine tuned Haley's nutritional needs, and I began to learn more and more theoretically, and then in practice, like when you watch a human being transform like this day after day, month after month, year after year, it becomes so clear. And it really is this process of, I just began to notice cause and effect. And I burned out. That's probably a whole other podcast episode, but you know, I will mention in this journey, I burned out hard. I blew my adrenals. I ended up in bed. My thyroid went down. I wasn't having a period. My hair fell out. I mean, it was terrible. And so I realized I have the tools to make a healthy body and brain. I have to apply them to myself. And when I began to do that, I just became unwilling to feel bad anymore.
I'm so glad. I mean, I'm so glad you said that, in terms of, because I think it's when you learn, because I'm also like a lifelong learner, like a really, you know, and you can get to a point where you're taking in all this information, but then it's like, how do you apply it? There's a gap, and then you can get overwhelmed. So tell us how you got through that period, even of your own. It sounds like your own, like you're doing things for your own self that have maybe helped your brain as well.
Right?
I think we're never too old, right?
Oh, for sure. Oh my gosh. You know, I read upside down about twice as fast as most people read right side up. Now, what does that have to do?
How did you even discover that?
What, sitting across the table homeschooling a kid? But sitting across the table. So the book was upside down for me.
Yeah.
So, but here's the thing, like, why does that matter? People might be out there saying, so what? Well, that's the power of neuroplasticity, people. I wasn't born with that. That's me in that environment with a really healthy brain. Why? Because I rest, It's well oxygenated because I'm moving at the right intensity every day. I'm eating whole foods high in fat that my brain needs. I'm getting all my amino acids. Those are the proteins for my neurotransmitters. I mean, you know, I could explain all of this, but the point is, like, day by day by day, I built a healthy brain for myself as well. And it's incredible. I live in this place I call thriving now that I never would have known had I not had that journey.
Yeah.
Which is why, you know, Haley now sometimes she kind of walks around like she gets to take all the credit. Like, yeah, you'd never be like this if it weren't for me. You'd be sick, you know, like all those people in your family that are still eating the way you used to and, you know, living the way you used to. And
so how long did that take you to, because it's a journey and I think it never really ends, I think to some degree, but how long did it take to, well, let's focus on your daughter. So how long did it take for her to get to a place where you felt like, wow, there's some healing going on? I can really see this impact of, it sounds like food was a component. I'm curious what the other components were as well.
Yeah. So food was a component. I mean, the other components were just, you know, just the pieces of this program of neurological reorganization. So, you know, creeping and creating cross pattern movement, creeping and crawling and running and brachiating and biking. And eventually, you know, you begin to do that, you do more of it, you do it faster. And then so the next challenge was, you know, to do a triathlon. And the next challenge was, so it just, it literally, it's a miracle. My mom called it a miracle in slow motion. And it literally is, and here's the thing, it literally is like this for every single one of you. Like what you do day after day after day after day after day, what you repeat, you're creating yourself with those habits. Just like you're creating yourself with everything you put inside your mouth. You know, what do you want to be made of? And so it literally is that. Now, I don't think I would have been as consistent in some of those habits if I weren't fighting for my daughter's life, which is why that was a gift. Mm-hmm. But I want to say this to people out there listening, like, you're just made of what you do day by day. And so all you have to do is today. You don't have to decide what you're going to eat every day for the rest of your life or what these big changes are. Like, you just have to today go pick something that looks and smells good to you. And I could talk more about that too, because the truth is I now can eat anything I want. People are like, ooh, I would love to be able to eat anything I want.
So what does that mean? Yeah. What does that mean?
So let's reframe it. What that means is I have lived in this all natural way for long enough that my primal instincts really are front and center. Okay. So I don't, and you could ask, you know, my Haley's like this too. People say to her, don't you ever cheat, meaning cheat on her really good, healthy diet and, you know, what, eat a brownie or something. Mm-hmm. And she looks at him so weird. She's like, I don't, because I already know what that input feels like. And I don't want to feel that way. Plus, I don't crave that anymore. A really good, healthy body only looks for, this is evolutionary.
Yeah.
The color in our food, it's the smell of our food, it's seasonally, you know, I eat a lot of cinnamon this time of year, but those instincts are so alive and so, so vibrant that they only guide me to what truly works for me. Okay. And this is why what I teach in my program is you don't need willpower, actually. When we kind of clean up the static and we get you to your carb tolerance and, you know, we figure a few things out for you, we begin to make these steady habits. Because nature loves us. Life loves us. It, you know, the corporations don't. They love their profits, which is why we really need to unhook from this. And the thing that I like to talk about now, because little did I know that this journey was going to take me, you know, so far away from all the habits, you know, the corporate habits that we were hooked into. And I don't know if I answered your last question, but
what does a diet look like? And when I say diet, I don't mean in the sense of like restricting, but right. Just what does your food intake look like? Like, what were you feeding? What were you feeding your child at 5, 6, 7, whatever? How did you manage to, because I think one of the really challenging things, how do you manage, let's say you get on a whole food path, all the other extra external pressures of parties and, you know, and now we're in the society of where, like, you know, there's a lot of parent, you know, parental involvement in everything. And so there's a lot more, it seems like, at least from when I grew up, there's a lot more activities. There's just like a million things to do. So how do you manage that? And then maybe we'll secondarily go to the adult version of that. But like, what did you do what did you feed your child? Like, what was the changes? And especially coming from such a, maybe like, you know, a fast food diet or something that's like processed, because, you know, we'll pick up takeout, or, you know, how do you get from that to what, and then what is the whole food diet? Because I think that means different things to different people.
For sure. And you know what? Absolutely. It should mean different things to different people. And I think that's one of the problems, is that a lot of folks out there are sort of selling like the right way. And, mm-hmm. and actually that's what I teach. That's so different. It's like, we need to find out what works for you. And it's different depending on where in the world you live, what's fresh and local for you. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's a part of it, but what if, you know, your genetic and ethnic background come, you know, from a different tradition, like everybody knows what it needs. And there's a couple of universals. So we need adequate fat. That's got to be number one. We need adequate protein. That's got to be number two. And then we need all the fresh vegetables in as many colors as possible, up to and underneath, but up to our carb limit. And what I mean by that is what our body can tolerate. And what I mean by that is how much it can actually use for energy, and then what the rest is stored as fat, and what I'm teaching in my program right now. But mm-hmm. so when you say, what did I do for my child? Well, people think, and they still think, we're pretty weird. I mean, I can be a little bit of an, you know, I don't get invited to dinner as much as honestly I would like to be, you know, people don't know what I do. And it's, you know, to me, it's actually quite simple. I think if you roll back and you look at maybe how humans were eating about 400,000 years ago, that's kind of what I do. It's simple for me. It's like, if you,
so do you have like your own farm, or
I wish, because
some people do, some people, like, you know, then yeah. they're like self-sustaining. So how,
well, if you can pick it and eat it, I eat it. And so okay. There's plenty of that laying in the produce department and even the worst of grocery stores, honestly. Yeah. And I understand we have this issue in our modern cities with, you know, food deserts and
yes.
So I get it. Not every store has the nicest produce department. I get it. But that's what I do. If you can pick it and eat it, I eat it. And often yeah. I eat it raw. Sometimes I eat it steamed. If you can kill it and eat it, I eat mm-hmm. it. I'm a meat eater. I eat unprocessed meat. And that's everything from a roasted chicken to a beef roast to a pork mm-hmm. chop to, you know, all natural bacon without the preservatives. I mean, there's so many options. People, I go to parties and one family member in particular comes to my mind, because she'll always say something like, I know there's so little here you can eat. There's so little you eat. And I was like, wow, holy wow, because there's so much that I eat. It's just that it's not here. And, right. and what's funny is that the banquet spread at the holiday meal looks like so many different things, and it's not. It's three things. It's wheat and sugar and oil, bad oil. Like, that's in everything here.
Yeah.
It looks like different things. It's not. I mean, I eat 32 different vegetables in a week. Why wow. not? Go look at the grocery store.
Wow, that's amazing.
There's different colors and textures, and that's in my best. That's at my best. I mean, I was busy last week and I had cold bacon for lunch, right? But so what I did with my daughter is I had, and I'll just say this as a tip to people too. Like, if you want to make a change, it is so important to focus on the change you want to make, who you want to become, where you're going. Because it's so easy to get caught up in the, well, you can't have that anymore. Well, I guess we have to pass on that. Well, this is bad. We shouldn't have this. And none of that feels good, right? And so that doesn't help. So we began to play this game. I began to figure out, okay, well, pretty much some good plain unprocessed protein. There's 6 or 7 different meats we could pick, right? There's fish, chicken, and beef. Like, there's lots. If you start to do your homework, you can probably find elk. You can probably find duck. You can now see, this is how our early humans would have, they would have had a variety. Yep. And some of that, I was creeped out by some of that at first. I'm like, oh no, that's weird. I only eat chicken nuggets. You know, like, that's what I'm used to. That's the texture and the taste. And so it takes time. That's the other thing I want to say to people. If you want to make positive changes for yourself, for your kiddos, and you can't make that change for your kiddos without making it for yourself.
Yes, that's the, yeah.
It has to be the whole family getting well. And they have to see you doing it, and they have to see you loving it. So start where it's easy. Start with something simple. Start with the vegetables that you do love. And then you just build from there. So we had a game. I would take Haley grocery shopping with me. We'd go through the produce section and find something new. Buy it. Bring it home. Now,
are you a cook? Are you a big cook? Like, how did you?
I became one.
Okay.
I'm no gourmet. But I make food that I love to make, and I love to make my own food. I do the really simple things these days. I'm pretty hooked on my crock pot, and I do have a spare crock for it. So if one of them's dirty, I can still cook in the
Oh,
crock pot.
nice.
Like, that's
That's
where I'm at.
amazing.
Oh, yeah. Get yourself a backup to your crock pot. So there's that. But, kids can find this quite fun. And honestly, we all know, like I said, these instincts are so close to the surface in our children. Honestly, it's not as hard as we think to change their eating habits. If the bad things, and I really don't want us to not serve candy and cakes and that kind of all the processed foods because they're bad. I don't want you to not do it because this is bad and this is good. That's still old paradigm thinking. I want you to begin to notice how it feels. And I want you to do it out of a sense of love for yourself and offering your body, what it's really asking for. In the beginning, that could be hard because we do have cravings, and so you have to get the static out of the way. But if you make this a game, if you invite your child to, I mean, you've got Google now. You can Google that new vegetable. You could probably even take a picture of it and let AI tell you what it is and six new recipes with it. Like, just try to make it fun, make it an adventure, and then just let it grow from there. So 27-year-old Darcy would laugh if she knew that asparagus was my favorite food now. She was not going to touch that weird stuff. But this Darcy would not touch an Oreo with a 10-foot pole either. Like, I don't want it. It's not willpower. I just don't want it.
I mean, it's interesting because I had gotten, I got sick. It was a while back, but for 3 days I couldn't eat anything. And I was really addicted to like cookies. Like that's like one thing that if I see a chocolate chip cookie, like I had to eat it. And after th and I could and it really was like an addiction. Like I if I saw and even if I didn't want it, it'd be there and I want to eat it. And so after these 3 days, I remember this so distinctly. I saw the cookie on the table. I'm like, I don't even really want to eat that actually, because I hadn't had anything like in my body but like, broth and whatever else, like, and so that addiction is really real. And I think so I saw that firsthand and I can still remember it because it was such a poignant moment. And then I think for so I think as parents, as adults, maybe we can make that change slowly and maybe we can incorporate more things. But then I think one of the things that I'm curious about your take is when you have children that are going to school, that have snacks provided, that have all these things, how do you because some of the stuff has to be practical, like we or at least something that's sustainable, I should say. And how do you do that? I guess in a lack of a better like question, it's just, because of the there is children do go to school, children, especially when they're younger, they may not have the ability to, well, why does she get that? And maybe they don't even want it at that point, but it's still, well, I don't get that. So what do you do with that?
I totally understand this question. I'm so glad you asked me. I mean, I will just share from my own experience how I can totally resonate with that. I mean, and like I said, when I was changing my daughter's eating habits, I was really doing it from this place of feeling like I had to save her life. Because if Haley had a blood sugar spike, so if she ate the candy, she could have a seizure. So I was highly motivated to be compliant, so to speak, with what was working for us. If she, and that's her question, her answer to the question about do you cheat is like, no, I don't, I can't. And so there's that. But I will say, during those transition years, before I had an adult daughter who could choose for herself and in any environment, so we go to parties now. Well, we eat before we go. Or I take something to contribute that I know is going to work for me. Or, so there's lots of ways to deal with this. Now, when you have kids, I know it is harder. I mean, I remember the Easter egg hunts in my family at Easter. And I remember coming forward and saying, like, hey, this year, do you think we could put something else inside the eggs? Like, could we put toys in there, little candies, or I mean, not candies, but I mean, like, instead of candies, like money, little coins. And the general consensus was, no, my kids deserve their Easter candy. So what did I do that year? Well, I had a talk with Haley. She was about 8 at the time. And I said, the way we eat at home, and what we've been learning about sugar, how you're learning and you're, and she's like, yeah, you mean how we take care of my brain injury? I'm like, yeah, how we take care of your brain injury. And I said, at the Easter egg hunt, there's going to be candy in the eggs. What do you think about that? She's like, we don't eat candy. I said, we don't. What should we do? She said, I could give mine to Logan. You know, so I mean, I was so worried about it. And the truth was, like, some of that wisdom was going to come from her.
Yeah.
And so what did we do? Well, we actually pitched in half of our eggs with the money in them. And Logan's mommy brought the eggs with the candy in it. And they all went and found their eggs. And at the
Yeah.
end, as they opened them, they're like, oh, that's one of yours. Whoop, this is one of mine. And it was, you know, honestly, it wasn't as hard as I thought it would be.
Yeah. Kids, I think, get it pretty quickly. I've noticed that with even with our kids, it's like, well, that wasn't healthy. This one is a whole food, and and we're not anywhere near, I think, where I want, what I would like to be. But you're right. Like, it's interesting because the kids, they'll come up with a solution if they know, if they're like told, like, hey, this is what we're gonna do. So.
And you know, that was after some time of being consistent with it. I mean, I also remember the story the day that I lost her in the Kroger, the grocery store. And by the time I found her, she came walking toward me and she has like blue all over her face. And I was like, what is wrong with her face? And as I came closer to her, I looked to the side and there was a donut on the front of the shelf, a big bite out of it, right? Because she was like, she was younger at that time too, but I was like, oh, you can't do that. You know, we have to buy this one. She's like, what are you going to do with it? I was like, well, we're going to throw it away, I guess. We don't eat this, right? And she's like, oh. So I think I gave her that one.
So what do you do when maybe it's not a cheat, maybe it's an accident, maybe it's a, something happens and you're in this transition phase. Let's say people are listening to this and like, you know what? I really want to try to do this. I think I could, whatever. And then something happens. Are you resetting or are you building on something? Like, let's say, we're doing good for a week and then we get invited to a party. And at the party, there's nothing there. We're really hungry. And we're like, okay, well, I really want a piece of cake. And they eat a piece of cake. Like,
I think it's
what's your
both,
advice?
Rashida, and I've definitely been there, and I think that's just a part of the journey. And
Okay.
so I think every time you do that, you go a week or 2 weeks or 10 days, eating really well, and you don't have any of the sugar stuff, and then you go to the party and you notice how you feel the next day. And I think as we feel better and better and better, we become less and less willing to feel bad. And I think it literally is that. So, you know, for me, it's been, I had a chocolate bar about a month ago, and it sent me into like almost a week of really hopeless thoughts and low
Oh, wow.
energy. And it's the sugar in that. Well, because, and I think to myself, I was like, oh my gosh, I should have known, but it the whatever, you know,
Right.
whatever the trigger was for it. And then I kind of gave in. And then see, I'm somebody, and people, I think this is one of the things people are surprised to learn from me is that addiction and intolerance are actually two sides of the same coin. And so there's this whole thing, like one bite, and carbohydrate intolerance then means that we're going to get the craving for more. The way the body has to process it automatically translates as a craving for more. So when I got that craving for chocolate, which let me just say was the first time I had done that in almost 2 years.
Wow.
And so what happens is it just, we go longer and longer and longer. The better we feel, the more we want to feel better, the less we tolerate that kind of self-abuse,
Yep.
which is honestly what it is. We just, once we kind of wake up to, oh, I did it again. Like, whoops, I did it again. And what do? You move forward with self-compassion. You drink a lot of water, you get some rest, you take extra fat or whatever we have to do to sort of get through the symptoms of it. And you just keep going. And the truth is, a really healthy body and brain don't often throw up the call for things that will hurt it. And I can recognize that craving for a chocolate bar was actually not a craving for a chocolate bar. That's how I interpreted a need for a dopamine hit. And I can get that in other ways, you know? And so we begin to really get into this great communication with our body. And it's a day at a time. Oh my God, it's a minute at a time journey sometimes, you
I
know?
like that mic the micro view of it because it can get overwhelming. Even like, what's for dinner tomorrow? What's for dinner today? I mean, it's constant, I think, and especially now, I think everybody's just so busy with everything. It's so hard to even think. Because you have to, I mean, this is a commitment, right? Like to be able to like, because you have to cook it. You can't pick anything up. Well, I'm actually curious. Do you find so for let's say a busy person who doesn't have like practically speaking doesn't have the time to or they can't cook every single day or whatever and have the fresh foods. Are restaurant foods off limits or if you find whole foods and you're eating like vegetables and a salad or I don't know, whatever from a restaurant, like it is that available or something that's part of something that somebody should consider? as a
Well, for sure. I think what we have to do, I think at the root of it, what I want people to remember is that you have to make the best choices that you can wherever you find yourself. And so what that means is you're on a road trip and you didn't have time to pack right, and there's a hard-boiled egg at the gas station. Like, that's not my best choice of egg. You know, I like to buy my eggs from the farmer, but like, if I didn't have, like, if that's where I find myself, like, that's the best choice. And so, you know, we that's what we're doing all the time. And so, yeah, restaurant food. I mean, to be honest with you, these days, I don't love to eat out much. Most restaurants are using the bad seed oils, and I find myself feeling inflamed after I've eaten out. So again, that's just where I am now. That's a part of my journey. I probably wouldn't have even noticed that extra inflammation 10 years ago. Now I'm noticing it. Like, my face looks different the next day. I've got a few restaurants that I know don't use those bad oils, and so I eat there. But you can choose. I mean, I don't think McDonald's has very many good choices, but I think almost any other restaurant, you can get a burger without a bun. I talk about this. This may not be the place to go all down this rabbit hole right now, but you know, there's so much known now about gluten intolerance and celiac, and because I am one, and I kind of found out the hard way, which is another story. But listen, gluten-free is not always, I mean, maybe it's a step up and that's better. And if you suspect you're gluten intolerant, I want you to definitely choose gluten-free over the regular stuff. But there's still so many processed carbs in there. Like, some of us are kind of just, I know we're all trying to do our best, but we've forgotten a little bit about sort of the natural sources of food. So you can go almost anywhere and get a steak and a salad. That's about as natural as you get. You know, there's a restaurant, instead of all the breaded, deep fried stuff, you can get a piece of salmon and some steamed broccoli. And it's not being on a diet. It's just looking for the least, the way I think to do this is to look for the least processed option. And so whatever comes on your plate should just look as much like what nature made as possible.
And so this is a really basic question, but I just, because sometimes it's easy to lose sight of things, but when somebody says processed, what does that mean? Like, does it mean anything that's in a package or in a box or in this? Or like when you say sugar, what does that mean? Because sometimes there's some people have termed, this is good sugar, this is bad. Like, what are the, because definitionally, I think is it's almost like level set to feel, okay, this is what does it mean to be a processed food? And that might seem like a really obvious answer, but sometimes it's not.
No, I agree with you. And I'm teaching a carb challenge this week where I'm talking all about this in depth, and you'd be amazed how many people actually have the same question. And they're asking like, wait, is this sugar? Is this not? Is this processed? Is it not? So here's what I want you to understand about that word processed. It basically means, like I just said, if I can pick it and eat it, I eat it. So broccoli, not processed, right? Mm-hmm. Cauliflower, not processed. Carrots, not processed. That's the way they look in the ground. That's the way they look on your plate. You wash them a little bit. That's how they look. So, you know, if you can identify the food, that's a really good place to start eating more like that. Doesn't mean you can't, that can't be delicious. I mean, steam it, put butter all over it, you know, so, you know, the brain needs those fats in the butter. So anyway, processing then can, so for meat, let's think about it. A beef roast is not very processed. Like, that's just, that's a cut piece of meat. Like, that's it, the way it is. Hamburger, that's more processed. Now the meat got run through a grinder. Sausage, even more processed. Now it's got seasoning, spices, and sugar added. So the chicken nugget, that's way down the processing path, isn't it? That's been ground and it's had ingredients added, and then it's been smushed into a patty, and then it's been covered, and then it's been fried. So that's way down the process thing. Typically, the most processed foods do come in a box or a bag, and they're in the center of the grocery store. And so what I advise people to do is to shop the perimeter.
Oh.
I skip the bakery because I'm celiac, right? I can't have gluten or grain. Most of those grains are really high in carb, which is the answer to your next question. So anyway, shop the perimeter, like go to the produce and then skip the bakery. Go to the meat section, go get your healthy dairy. You know, go around to the frozen side, get some of your frozen fruit, or, you know, sometimes frozen vegetables are fine too, because they're not processed. They're just frozen. You know, when you open the bag, it's just green beans. They're there, right? So that's the kind of the trick to do that. And then to answer your question, sugar is a tricky one because it's hiding. sugar needs to be redefined, and I'll do it for you here very quickly, but it's the sweet stuff, right? The white granulated sweet stuff that we add to foods where we recognize sugar by its sweet taste. Those are donuts and cupcakes. And I mean, what else? Help me here. Cookies, right?
Cakes and pies. And yeah, we're getting to the holiday season. Stuff. So yeah.
And there's a lot of propaganda around it. I mean, it comes from these cultural expectations. We were, you know, making a pie, making Christmas cookies, you know, there are emotional needs in there. That's our need to belong to our culture and to feel loved, right? So there's a lot to unravel here. But the idea too is that people are confused because they think, and this is what happens, what you said, this is what happens in every second grade classroom, is the teacher thinks they're giving a healthy snack. It doesn't have sugar in it if it comes out of a Goldfish cracker box. Goldfish crackers aren't sugar, right? They don't taste sweet. Yeah, wrong. There actually is some sugar in there. But number two, that's refined flour. And refined flour is a form of sugar. So all the things that even don't taste sweet, like bagels, bread, crackers, chips, pretzels, those things are sugar. And here's why. When we eat them and we digest them, because of how finely processed they are, they turn into glucose in the bloodstream immediately. And glucose is just what sugar is called when it's inside the body. And this is what sets us up for all of these metabolic problems. Now, I want to talk about process. So here's how you know, is it processed? Well, I want you to imagine, or if you can't imagine it, go Google it. Go get on Google and Google cane sugar. Now, you're going to get some pictures of the white stuff. You're going to get some pictures of donuts with pretty colors on top. But I want you now Google sugar cane.
Yeah, I'm Indian. And so I used to, when I was very young, they used to have vendors that would literally take a sugar cane and squeeze out the juice. And they made drinks out of that.
Now, that would not be as bad for your health to take the cane, break it open and suck the sap out, right?
Yeah.
That is still a straight form of sugar. And you can definitely still have some issues, but that's what it is. And so the way, like the cupcake, does it look like how it grew? I mean, sugarcane is grass. It's a field of grass. And, you know, when we pick and eat the carrot, we know what we're eating. When we eat a cupcake, we have forgotten what that even looked like, how it grew. And the same for grains. Grains and sugar look almost the same. They're grass. And we break off the top and we split the kernel into a bunch of pieces. As we do every step in that processing is throwing out parts of the nutrients that would be in that plant that aren't. And, you know, it doesn't look anything like that. And people say whole grain. Well, isn't whole grain better? Well, I hate to tell you, but the bad news is there's really no whole grain left on the planet. If it comes in a plastic wrapper and it smushes at all when you pick it up, that's not whole grain. No matter what words they put on the outside, that's not whole grain. That's very highly processed. There's no way to make it spongy and fluffy like that without processing it. And
so what about like rice? Is that like, I mean...
Good question. Rice is far less processed, but still look at how rice grows. We're still just pulling out those little kernels off the plant. Whereas the carrot, you cut the leaves off, but you still eat the plant.
Yeah.
So rice is, it's less problematic. It's still a grain. And there's still this issue in our modern world today of what I teach about now, which is carbohydrate intolerance. So rice, you know, is quite starchy and it can just put a lot of people over. Not that there's anything necessarily wrong with it as a food, but, and so I invite people just to sort of pay attention to how you feel.
You know, it's interesting. I ask about rice because, so I mentioned that I was Indian. And so one of the things that I've kind of just are confusing really is culturally, when you talk about how we used to eat, right? Like our ancestors would like rice is a very big staple in an Indian diet. And so are some of the things, you know, like a roti, which is a very flat bread, but it's, you know, and, you know, you talk about other cultures and what their ancestors ate. How there's maybe a disconnect for me as to when I start hearing, not necessarily this, but just whatever is in the media of like, oh, don't eat lentils or don't eat whatever. And I'm like, well, that's, I can't understand that actually. And so like, how do you like decipher what culturally might be tied to you as, you know, your grandparents and their great grandparents ate this and seems to be healthy? Where do we go from there?
That's a great question. I mean, I'm teaching it right now in this 2-week carb challenge. What the first step has to be, because if anything, what we need to understand is that the Neolithic agricultural revolution was an experiment. And if we're going to be really objective, we have to look at where that experiment has gotten us. It's not having great outcomes. We've got 91% of the population of the planet today, the adult population of the planet, overfat, with at least 2 to 3 markers of metabolic disease. There are only about 8% of people on the planet who are metabolically healthy now. So we have to look at, we just have to look at that. So I think to answer your question, I don't think we need to start saying like any particular food from a particular culture is wrong. What we need to do is look at it through this new lens and say, well, we need to get back to eating, number one, the fats that we need. That should be like the first nutrient that comes in, healthy fats. Number two, we got to eat adequate protein, whether that's animal protein or not. And then we have to find our carbohydrate tolerance, because there's a limit to the carbs the body can metabolize before it starts turning them into fat that's stored that then can't be used for energy at all, which is why we've got all these metabolic diseases and learning disabilities and problems like diabetes and heart disease. Like the cells are starving for energy because we have this metabolic problem. Now, within that context, what are the best carb foods to choose? Well, the ones that are least processed, so they look the most like the way nature made them. So these are squashes and gourds. And yes, then maybe things like lentils and beans. And yes, then maybe things like grains. Depending on our body's carbohydrate tolerance, we choose from the foods that are culturally important and familiar to us, but within that natural range, because there's a difference between eating some whole lentils and eating lentil flour mixed with sugar made right. into something else. Yeah. And there's a lot of parents out there kind of wanting to do this because, like you just said, you know, we've got to send our kids to school and there's the cupcakes at the party. Yep. And yeah, Haley didn't want to be the one kid left out of not eating the cupcake. So, you know, I'm going to send something that's made right with coconut flour, or almond flour, or something that's within, that's not going to hurt her, that will at least help her feel like
part,
she's
like part of the community. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. And this is where it becomes tricky, because we want to be connected to our communities. And psychologically, that is a huge component of our health. But let's face it, a lot of our communities are drastically unhealthy. And so I propose, I mean, that's one of the things I do in my work now. I mean, that's why I'm doing this carb challenge in this big group of people, because we have to start creating communities that can orbit this idea of what true health is. You know, when my grandmother passed, she had one part of one foot. She was in terrible ill health and suffered for the last good 10 or 15 years of her life. And I loved her dearly. And we were very, very, very close. But at one point, I had to ask myself this question: to love my grandmother and be connected to her, do I need to eat the same way she does? And honestly, when I look back on it now, I mean, would she want that for me? Would she really want me to be sick and to suffer that way, the same way she did?
Yeah, that's such a poignant question, and also a very difficult one, I think, especially when food is such a part of culture. And when you don't eat, especially like me, even me, like coming in, if I go to my house and, you know, they're serving whatever, and it's like, oh, you're not eating that? Because we've changed our eating habits to some degree, and you're almost like an outcast, and you're like,
totally.
And there's a very disconnecting moment. So you're right. I mean, it's such a part of, it's a hard thing to navigate. I don't think it's easy at all. And so I think this is a good place to maybe segue into you talk about your carb challenge. And so what is your carb challenge, and it sounds like you already have one underway, and are you going to have another one so that people can join and get all this really great information?
Oh, it's a good question. I appreciate it. So let me just say, if you're out there and you're listening to this and you're thinking, I probably need to change my eating habits and really want to change my eating habits, and you're feeling like that's going to make you sort of the black sheep in your family, like, you know, not fitting in. I get it. And you're not alone with that. And that's one of the reasons why, yeah, I create community around this idea of getting healthy. And there's no shame or blame, because like you said, some of us, it's a step forward and 2 steps back and then 2 steps mm-hmm. forward. And, you know, it's not a competition. It's not a race. There's no perfection needed. It's just this beautiful relationship with your body. and learning to listen in when it feels good, we're doing right. When it feels bad, I don't want to say we're doing wrong. I want to say, I think there's something we need to start noticing. So there's that. And I do that in community because I feel like we need support. I did.
Yeah.
I'm making basically what I wish I had had. And, you know, I remember the times feeling left out and everybody kind of rolling their eyes at what I was eating or not eating. And, you know, the 17,000 questions, can you have this? Can you not have that? Why are you not, you know? And it eventually is like, you know, I'm good. Make what you want. I'm going to come be with you. And I feed myself. I'll eat before I go, or I'll bring something to contribute. And 9 times out of 10, everybody's eating what I contributed and not saying like, what's different about this one? Like, they just eat food, you know? And sometimes people are like, you know, I notice I ate your version of whatever and I didn't have this XYZ symptom. I wasn't so bloated. I wasn't so this or that. And I, could you teach me more about that? And so this is why I say, you know, as we heal, we become healers. And I think that's so important for our, you know, starts with maybe just your kids and then maybe your partner and then maybe your, you know, the parents, the neighbors, the friend at school whose kid also has this. And this is what happened. So yes, I'm doing this carb challenge right now. And we started a couple days ago. And by the time you air this, I'm not sure where we'll be. But, you know, I invite people to come over to my website and take a look. I'm doing this sort of group challenge around finding our own body's personal carbohydrate tolerance, because everybody has heard of low carb and everybody kind of knows carbs are kind of bad, but which ones and how much, like you just said, like what's the deal? Are lentils good or bad? And instead of asking, is this food healthy? There are some clear answers to that. Like again, I don't want to shame anybody out there, but I mean, are chicken nuggets healthy? I mean, probably not. But in general, I don't want us to say, is this food good or bad? I want us to learn to ask, does it work for me? How do I feel after I eat that? You know, and if you've got a bunch of symptoms, what you've been eating isn't really working for you. And it's probably a good idea to experiment with that and change a bit. For me, the first step is finding your carbohydrate tolerance, because when we do that, we are automatically, for a short time, eliminating the most problematic foods. And we can kind of get cut through the static. I say, listen to your body, and you might be thinking, how the heck do I do that? What is it even saying? I don't know. I just took an Advil because I'm not sure what it's saying, right? And so I've been there, you know? And so we have to get some of the static out of the way. And really the way to do that is to find out our carb tolerance. So we restrict carbs to a certain degree, so the body can sort of heal without all this insulin stuff going on, without the high, low blood sugar, without the cognitive issues. You know, blood sugar to the brain is a really important issue. I say this as a woman who healed her daughter's brain injury, right? And we start there. And then what happens is you have, maybe for the first time ever, an experience of what your body would feel like without all of that drama. And it's powerful. And then we begin to bring foods back in. Based on what? Well, are they natural or not? Like we just said, the processed stuff will stay for later. Are they important to you? So one of the first things you're going to bring back is, you know, the thing that connects you to your grandmother's cooking, maybe, right? So for some people, that's lentils. For some people, that's squash. And then we watch the body. We watch these signs and symptoms. And when the signs and symptoms come back, we go, oh, that's what it feels like when I hit myself with a hammer. Oh, now I have a choice. Now I have a choice. Why? I'm aware of it. And now I have this level of understanding. And from there, Rashida, it literally is this trial and error, cause and effect. It's this beautiful dance. It helps to have support. That's why I do this work I do, because it can be confusing. And then we've got mamas who are like, okay, no, wait, how do I get my kids on board with this? Or how do I know how my kids are feeling? And so there's all of these ways that we can sort of notice by their behavior, by their sleep, by their bathroom habits. We can tell a lot about what the body is doing. And again, it takes us out of that old paradigm. How many of these and how much of that and who said it's good and is it bad? We just say,
how do you feel? That's so amazing.
Fun. It becomes easy. There's no shame to it. I don't know if I'll do this particular carb challenge again or not. It's a huge undertaking. But definitely, you know, it's the first step in my program. So I do that as a group program. Once a year, I offer a course called the Vibrant Woman Course, and that's for women only. It's a beautiful journey, kind of what you and I have just been talking about, from starting with like, well, what if we redefine food? What if I could help that be less confusing for you? What if we just redefine it and sort of begin to look at food differently and select foods differently, and then learn to sort of cook them in a way that, yeah, fits with our lifestyle and our busy needs. But what if we could redefine that? We start there. And then we say, you know, what about the ways we're exercising? Sometimes we're doing more harm than good there too. What about all of our stresses? Well, we can't control all of them, but what if we were able to find the hidden ones that we do have control over? You know, and then those three pieces add up to more than 1 + 1 + 1 = 3. They actually add up to what our hormone balance is.
Oh gosh. I would love, yes, you are going to be back on my show.
I think we have to have a round two. Yeah, we'll just schedule it. We'll just do a round two. I'll talk about perimenopause and menopause and where I am and what I know. And because I said I burned out hard and was able, I mean, I basically hit menopause in that burnout like 2 decades ago. So what did I do to get back into having beautiful, painless, regular periods for the next 2 decades after that? I'm delighted.
So you were able to really like, almost, I don't want to say reverse it, but maybe reverse it. Maybe that's a bad word. Maybe that's not a bad word. Because I think, you know, sometimes we get stuck. We feel so, everything's futile, where it's like, oh, I'm so far gone. Or my kids, my own eating habits are so terrible. Like, how am I ever going to like change that? Or like, if we're hard, like, you know, women, it's like, there's such a hormonal issue with nutrients. And what I'm hearing you say is that once you start to put better food in your body and you also activate your body from a physical standpoint, so those two things are very powerful to be able to almost go back in time maybe a little bit and just really reset maybe your where you're supposed to be.
That's beautifully said. That's absolutely accurate. In my case, and in the case of many of the women I work with, I watch this happen as they take this journey. It's almost like I aged in reverse, except I don't, it's not really like that. It's just like every year just gets better.
And so can you just share like maybe 30 seconds of, because we talk about symptoms in general terms, what were like some specific things that you see when people say, oh, I feel something, I feel bad. What does that translate to in terms of specifics? And then what does the, I feel better translate to into specific?
I'll give you one example. It usually starts with something quite simple, but subtle. And it can be as simple as this: sleepiness after meals. And that's so normal, right? Everybody has it. And the myth is it's the tryptophan in the turkey. That's why everybody passes that's out after Thanksgiving dinner. Not, it's the sweet potatoes and the stuffing and the bread. It's the carb load. Blood sugar goes up, insulin comes out to take it, blood sugar goes down, you have no fuel in your brain, you're tired. It is that simple. And it happens to our kids. That's the shame of that cold fish snack time. And then they're going to go into math and they can't math. They're mentally fatigued. So it's something as simple as that. So now people may not notice that that really feels bad until it progresses to. So that's one subtle sign that we are actually over our carb tolerance. But there might be others. There might be some PMS symptoms. Because see, what happens then is it sets off some inflammation triggers. I this might be hard for other women out there to believe, but I don't have pain with my period. I don't get cramps. Can I feel it? Yes, I feel it, but it's not painful and I don't need medication for it. And I'm not saying you're wrong if you need medication for it, but what I'm saying is that's another sign. And so we kind of really just, our culture normalizes. So how do we know that it feels better? Well, when you do my carb challenge and you restrict those carbs, within the first couple of days, you start to notice, I don't feel tired after lunch anymore. That's a change. That's worthy of noting. And we say, oh, I do feel a little better. And so the point is like, it really is a matter of momentum. You know, we can, if we kept going that way, it would be more than just sleepiness after lunch. It would be fatigue and more fat storage and more hormone problems. It could be different for different people. You know, like I said, we've got this list compiled that's research, it's evidence-based to kind of show what are the stages of this. I mean, at the far extreme end is a diagnosis of something like diabetes or heart disease or Alzheimer's. But the point is, and we know that feels bad, but the progression of that, what came before that? What came before that? What are those? A lot of us call them niggles. And I invite people to do this, like write down all the things that kind of annoy you about your body. Could be headaches.
I think some people don't even know, like similar to what you alluded to, it's like you don't even notice that that's not normal because you've lost your sense of what even the baseline is, because you know, like you've been, it's like, oh, I've always had this headache, or I've always been tired, and you don't even remember that that's not even what you shouldn't be. Like, that sounds so absurd, but like some people, this just like that chronic fatigue, that chronic thing that that's almost, well, that's just who I am. I'm just a tired person. Right. I just wake up tired.
That's just who I am. I've just always had bad periods.
Yeah.
And but because that's what I believed till I hit my rock bottom and found my way back to this place where it's like, wow, it didn't have to be so bad.
Gosh, I could talk to you forever, Darcy. I think that I would love to have you back on the show. There's so much more to unpack. You know, I think your carb challenge may or may not be on when we air this, but there's definitely a ton of things that you're doing for the community. And I'm going to put everything in the show notes, encourage everyone to follow you. And it is hard. So you do need a community. I think it is far easier to try to do something in community where you're not doing it alone and you can struggle together and get better together and improve together. And also like, you know, have the joys together too. So.
Absolutely. I think if there's anything I say to people in my community and in my programs that I want to say to you right now, all of you listening, you know, there's nothing wrong with you and there's nothing wrong with your kids. You know, your beautiful body, your children's beautiful bodies and brains, they're doing what bodies and brains do. They're adapting to the environment. And I think a lot of people need to hear that. Like, it's not your fault. There's nothing wrong with you. And if you're seeing things that you feel uncomfortable with and you'd like to change, that's a really good instinct to follow. And I want you to notice like that's something really, really right. You know, that communication from your body is really, really right. And it would be normal that you would need support to learn to listen into that because it's not taught anywhere else. Yeah. And so we have to be really gentle with ourselves. We just haven't been taught these things, but it's never, never, never too late. And I say this as a woman who has healed a brain. So it's never too late.
That's so wonderful.
Yeah.
Darcy, I mean, this is, like I said, I could talk to you forever. And so thank you, A, for being on this show. I do want to get to our OPD segment very quickly. I know we've gone over time, but as part of my podcast, I ask two just random questions so that people can start adding to their parental repertoire. And so for you, I have two questions, and one of them is kind of maybe in tune with what we talked about, but what is something that you feel guilty about as a mom?
Oh, wow. We need a whole show for this one. Oh my God. So this short and simple answer is, I think, related to what I told you before. It's not so much my strengths or what I had that allowed me to take this incredible journey and help Haley overcome her brain injury the way she did. It's really what I didn't have. And, you know, I think what comes in along with that is I didn't have much patience. I have such an idealistic perfectionist view that I let myself get really disappointed, and I can take that out on the people around me. So I feel the most guilty. My mom guilt is really heavy around the way I sometimes treated my daughter as a project. You know, we had to do a lot to heal that brain injury, but sometimes the way I did it, not the best. And so I say, you know, I just say that openly, and I have full compassion and love for my sweet past self who was like that. And so I just want to say that too. Like, if you're a mama out there at your wit's end, oh my gosh, you're not alone. Forgive yourself, because a lot of that we feel so guilty for, I think, I'll just speak for myself, was what I needed to survive in the moment anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing. Cause I think it's vulnerable to share what you feel guilty about, because you almost feel you feel bad about saying it. And mine is, you know, something that we've talking about right now is the food thing. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I feel like I'm constantly failing when it comes to food. Mm-hmm. And even though my sort of mindset is very in tune with what you're teaching and what I know to be not great for the body. And it's like, and yet I can't seem to like get the fresh foods and even for myself, it's like, I can't eat the good stuff and I've got all these like symptoms of other stuff. And I'm like, I know that if I could just like take the time and put that rock in there rather than, you know, the amount of work that I'm doing or the amount of this, you know, and that's what I feel guilty about. And so it is hard. And so I it's a struggle, and to be compassionate is, you know, something that I'm working on. And then my second question for you is also maybe a loaded question, but how do you handle your kids' bad attitude?
Oh, Well, with my own bad attitude, of course. Which is funny, like which came first? Which bad attitude came first? The chicken or the egg? Oh. Well, I tell you, I wanted to share this though, because this is something that occurred to me. You know, my mom guilt part says this occurred to you far too late. Why didn't you know this sooner? Well, you can't know what you don't know until you know it. So it occurred to me, my daughter's bad attitude, and I'm putting it in quotes, is simply, so a lot of that is her rejecting me or rejecting my ideas or rejecting my worldview, rejecting my paradigm, which is her job. Right? My kid's job and your kid's job is to see what we are not doing right yet and push against it and push us into a new paradigm, into a new way of seeing things and thinking about things. And so when I stopped pushing back against it, you know, feeling sorry for myself that I had to deal with these challenges of what exactly children come to do to challenge us, then I began to welcome all those re little rejections like as invitations. And that made it a lot easier. Not that it's not still annoying, but here's the other thing to say. I think I've gotten to a place because I have an adult daughter now too. So it's easier for me to say, you know what? You don't like the way I'm running the world or the house or the kitchen or whatever. Do it yourself. But the idea is that, yeah, what is a bad attitude anyway? I mean, where is it coming from? What does that
So that's
really
a good
mean?
question. That's such a good, turning it back around. Yeah, what is it about you? It's
We don't
all a
like
matter of
their tone of voice.
perception,
Yeah, we
right?
don't like their tone of voice. Okay, well, they're frustrated. Now, who taught her how to talk like that when she was frustrated? I mean, look in the
I
mirror,
know,
mama.
I know.
I had to do that a lot. But so, yeah, that's my answer. What about you?
Let's see. So mine are a lot younger, so their attitudes tend to be more tantrumy, like they don't like what I'm telling them. And I think, we're trying to focus on just remembering that even through the screaming and even through the hitting and the what, whatever they are in their like lizard brain is,
Right.
we still love them. They're still
Yes.
good inside. And sometimes it just means I gotta take a break. I'm gonna ignore it. I'm gonna leave the room. And I'm in the stage with because they're so little, my brain goes to the future. Oh my gosh, what is this gonna be
Yes.
when they're grown? So
Right.
that's where I'm trying to just stay in the present and not shoot there. But that is where it goes.
Bless your heart. You're so brilliant to name that too, because I remember having those thoughts like, oh my God, what's going to happen to you if you go out into the world and act that way with people? Like, you know,
Right. And it's a
the mom
reflection of
shame.
yourself. You feel,
Yeah,
yeah,
what are
you
people going to
feel.
think about me if you go out in the world and act like that?
Right.
Don't you do that to me. Don't you dare.
Yep.
Right? The whole time realizing, okay, wait a minute. Maybe I need to like, yeah.
Right. There's something I gotta work on over here.
Oh, but it's so important though that you recognize it too. You named this, you know, the brain thing. I mean, until the frontal cortex really comes online, like that's the reasoning stuff isn't possible. And even in moments of dysregulation, the frontal cortex is not online. So
Yeah. I mean, I have learned so much about the brain. That's why, I mean, I'm so intrigued by your depth of knowledge as well, because when you start learning about the brain, there is just so much that unravels, and it's such a powerful and magnificent thing that is it's a lot of people don't know, even from like what you said, dysregulation, like, that is now our language. We talk about that. Oh, I'm in a dysregulated state. I can't access my frontal cortex because I don't have the ability right now. So I think even just having the language and the information around it is like one step. So I love talking about the brain, and I'm thank you so much for like sharing your story and really telling the world about what you've done through your experience and how you can help, how you can help people. And I love how you're able to share your changes yourself, because I think that's relatable. Because I think everybody's in a place where they want to be able to change. It's just how to do it. So the resources that you're providing are great, and I encourage all my listeners to sign up, and we'll do this together. So thank you so much, Darcy. And really, you're welcome to come back to the podcast. I would love to talk to you more about all the other stuff that we didn't get to today. But thanks so much.
there's so much more to share, and I look forward to doing it. Thank you for having me, Rashida.
Well, folks, there you have it. What a wonderful conversation. And it isn't done yet. I do bring back Darcy, so you're in for a treat as we go deep on all things women related, including hormones, burnout, and how to distinguish the two. But this episode was fundamental to me to understand how much you really make a difference in your life by changing some habits and putting into your body what we were really meant to eat all along. And most importantly, the profound differences that you can actually feel if you really tuned into it. There were so many takeaways in this episode, it's hard to summarize them all, but I'll highlight a few that I want to leave you with. A paradigm shift of what's damaged versus injured and can be healed can really make the difference from living with an illness to healing and going on to thrive. Number two, Darcy doesn't have a medical degree and isn't giving medical advice, but she does talk about her experiences and what she learned about nutrition and how foundational it was to helping heal her daughter and her own body when she experienced burnout and adrenal fatigue. Number three, I loved how she talked about her journey, but also created something that actually goes from learning something in concept and in theory to actually implementing, and the fact that she does this in community. That connection to other individuals is so vital when you're trying to make a shift in your life, and she's an expert in getting women together. Number four, I love how honest Darcy was about where she started in terms of her nutrition, and that she went from eating McDonald's to pretzels to really going all in. I know so many of us can relate to just feeling out of control or not knowing where to start. And so she admits it was difficult. And I think that's the key. Knowing and learning about something and then putting it into practice can sometimes feel overwhelming. If you start out by expecting the difficulties, when it hits, you can remind yourself that it's just a part of the process and you can keep moving through it. And last but not least, if you want to make a change, it's important to focus on who you want to become and not all the things that you can't have or that you need to change. If you like what you heard and you enjoy this conversation with Darcy and you want to get to know her more and want to find out about her courses, check out the link in the show notes. And if you use the discount code FRIEND450, you'll get $450 off the course cost, which is a great deal. There's no better time than now to invest in yourself. And I encourage you to go check out her links, follow her on social media, everything will be in the show notes, and get feeling better. Until next time. Happy connecting. And this is a special message from my husband on our anniversary, December 21st, 2023. We have officially hit 10 years of being married. I could say so much about these 10 years, and we could go on and on. We've had incredible highs and lows. But I'm so grateful that I've had those highs and lows with you, because I know as we cross each and every decade going forward, we're just going to get better, evolve more, and become the people that we want to become. And I'm so thankful that we are on this growth path, this amazing learning, enlightenment that we have had, and the family that we've created. And so I am looking forward to the next decade. And I love you. Happy anniversary.